Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Good to talk with you, Dennis, as always.
We have a whole lot of things to talk about tonight, including an allegation against Mike Franken, the Democratic senatorial candidate in Iowa, and a new poll in the 3rd Congressional District race between Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn. But first, a quick mention about the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II of Britain today. It's been the big national and international story for the past week. In what some predicted would be the most watched televised event in history, the Queen was memorialized at Westminster Abbey and at Windsor Castle today. Westminster Abbey has been the scene of her wedding to Prince Philip in 1947, her 1953 coronation, and her 2022 funeral. 90 world leaders attended today's funeral, including President Biden. Then her coffin was transported to Windsor Castle, where she was buried alongside the remains of her parents, her sister, and her husband, Prince Philip. Elizabeth's 70-year reign as queen is over. Her son, Charles, is now King Charles III. And Laura, none of us, and probably no one ever, will see her likes again.
No, it's hard to imagine that any monarch will reign like that again. And of course, the interest in the royal family from around the globe, not just in the British Commonwealth countries, there's just always been a huge fascination with the royal family. So she was buried, as you mentioned, at Windsor Castle in the Memorial Chapel, named after her father, King George VI.
And one of the most emotional moments, televised moments today, was when at Windsor Castle, they took the crown off of her casket and removed it for the last time. And that symbolized so much.
Yes, there are so many rituals associated with this, but people can hardly remember. Most people living in the United Kingdom can't even remember the last time there was a king. This is very unusual to have such a long interrupted reign by one monarch.
70 years. All right, let's move on to an Iowa story. And here's another story that dominated the news last week in Iowa. It's about Piper Lewis. As everyone by now knows, she was 15 years old and homeless, and she was exploited by numerous men and raped by a man she eventually stabbed to death. She pleaded guilty to lesser offenses, sentenced to 5 years probation, and restitution payments of $150,000. What made this a national story is that a GoFundMe account was set up, and by the weekend, it had generated more than $500,000. What an outpouring.
Yes, there was a lot of criticism in how the Polk County Attorney's Office handled this case. Piper Lewis was a classic victim of human trafficking. This was experts in the field talked about this kind of case. And the crime occurred when she was 15 years old. And the fact that she was originally charged with first degree murder and ended up pleading guilty to these lesser offenses that carried potentially up to 20 years in prison. As it turned out, she was only sentenced to probation and restitution and fines. But Iowa law requires that if you are convicted of a felony and you cause somebody else's death, you have to pay at least $150,000 in restitution. And a lot of people just thought that was unbelievable that a trafficking victim would be ordered to pay $150,000 to the estate of the person who allegedly raped her.
So now she has a chance with this money that's been donated to truly change her life.
Yes, she's got to live in supervised facility for 5 years on probation. And she, according to the Des Moines Register reporting on this story, this money that's been raised by people through this GoFundMe account, it can be used to pay her fines and her restitution. And her former teacher who set up the GoFundMe says that he's going to use part of the funds to help support her college education. Some will support, she wants to create a small business, and she also wants to advocate for other people who were victims of trafficking and abuse. And so that part of the money will be used for that.
We wish her nothing but the very best. And now a late breaking story, breaking today anyway, as I clear my throat. It is not often that a story breaks involving a political campaign that has the potential to turn that campaign around, turn it on its head. But the Iowa Field Report today reported that a former campaign staffer for Iowa Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Mike Franken said he assaulted her earlier this year. Kimberly Strope Bogus worked on Franken's campaign until she says she was fired at the end of February She filed a report with Des Moines police in April, claiming she had been assaulted outside a Des Moines bar in March by apparently Mr. Franken. His name was redacted from the police report, but sources say it's him. Laura, take the story from there.
So Kimberly Strope Bogus worked on Mike Franken's 2020 Senate campaign, and she was managing this year's campaign early on. She was let go along with another staffer in February when Julie Stouch, who's a veteran of many campaigns, was brought on as the campaign manager. So it's not clear why. I read the police report, which was first published on the Republican website, the Iowa Field Report, and it's not clear why they were meeting in March. They were talking about bringing her back on to some lower level campaign job. And allegedly, he kissed her. The police never fully investigated this incident. The detective wrote in the report, it's fairly detailed, that Kimberly Strope Bogus described this person kissing her. And when asked whether she thought that he was doing this in an aggressive or sexual manner, she said no. She stated he just has an old-fashioned view of how to interact with women, and this is a part of it. Kimberly did not describe any sexual intent nor any intent to harm either her or the other women that he had allegedly kissed. So that is why the police did not end up, they considered this an unfounded case, and they didn't investigate it as a criminal act because they would have to be able to demonstrate some kind of criminal intent. So the police complaint was filed. It was never investigated, according to the material that was published today, the Des Moines Police Department report.
So according to the report, Strope Bogus said that the assailant grabbed the collar of the vest she was wearing, kissed her on the mouth before she could pull away from him. The report says she told police that, quote, this was something that he has done to several other women. At this moment, on this Monday night, we don't have any other reports of this activity happening. But should they come in, and perhaps even without those coming in, I think we can conclude that this is not something you want in a campaign at any time, and it is a blow.
No, and I did reach out to Kimberly Strope Bogus today. I did not hear back. Also, she didn't provide any comment to the Des Moines Register or Cedar Rapids Gazette on the story. She said the police report quotes her as saying that he has 1950s interactions with women and that he thinks that kissing and hugging women is part of his charm. So it sounds, the police report makes it sound like a generational issue. Just to be very clear to anyone listening, never kiss anyone without their consent. This is just not acceptable, regardless of whether anyone determines that a crime has occurred or a crime should be investigated. It's just not an acceptable way to behave with people.
Franken's campaign manager told KCCI-TV this afternoon in Des Moines in a written statement that the allegations are false. A reporter from the Cedar Rapids Gazette tweeted that, quote, Franken says he had one beer with her at a Des Moines bar at her request and repeatedly denied any unwanted advances and description of events alleged in the report. Okay, you would expect that, although that is a very strong statement on his part, the denying everything.
Yes, that's a strong statement because he could easily have dealt with it in a different way. He could say, well, this is just, I didn't mean anything. I didn't mean to do anything hurtful when then I don't know. We were just kissing goodbye. I don't know. There are many ways that a candidate could deal with this kind of report. Flat denial like this. I mean, it's potentially risky if there are possibly other women out there who could corroborate the story. On the other hand, if no other women come forward and say that they've had this kind of interaction, then the story could die away. But as you say, this is just not something, no candidate running for any office at any level ever wants a report that there was a criminal complaint filed with police.
So the report came out the same week that a new poll commissioned by Franken, by a Democratic group, shows him trailing incumbent GOP Senator Chuck Grassley by just 4 percentage points. 48% saying they plan to vote for Grassley, 44% for Franken. Again, this is an internal poll, so it's questionable, but it's interesting that it was that close.
Well, and we still haven't seen any internal polls from the Republican side on this race. I think it's interesting. I think, generally speaking, if the Republicans had polling that showed Grassley comfortably ahead or comfortably above 50%, reelect number, I think they would release it. There haven't been a lot of independent polls of this race other than the Des Moines Register's public poll by the Seltzer in July. I just haven't seen anything. And that's partly because the national forecasters consider it a safe Republican seat. And so a lot of the polling firms are doing the polls in states that are considered to have more competitive Senate races. But an incumbent polling below 50% doesn't look like they're in a very strong position. So I sure wish that we had more independent polling of this race to see where it stands.
Yeah, and that Des Moines Register poll you're talking about showed Grassley ahead of Franken 47 to 39%, 8 points. So let's hearken back 4 years to the gubernatorial campaign. If Democrats think this has echoes, well, it does. And it involves Nate Bolton, who was running for governor.
Yes, he was a state senator. He was one of the leading candidates. It was a six-way Democratic primary for governor. Fred Hubbell was the clear front runner, but Nate Bolton had raised a lot of money. He was running ads. He had a lot of endorsements from labor unions. And then about 2 weeks before the primary election in 2018, the Des Moines Register's reporter, Brianne Fonenstiel, published an account that several women had come forward and accused him of sexual assault. And he suspended his campaign right away within 24 hours.
So echoes of that, again, Mr. Franken is not accused of sexual assault. Let's be clear with that.
Yes, the report that was filed was for simple assault. Sexual assault under Iowa law, it has to be something involving the genitals, which this was not this allegation. The allegations against Nate Bolton were different, and he did not exactly deny. He said that what he remembered was different from what the women recalled, and he said that those incidents had occurred when he was drinking and that he had quit drinking and that alcohol was a factor. So it was quite different in some ways, but he did suspend his campaign right away. He did not resign from the Iowa Senate, and in fact, he was reelected to the Iowa Senate in 2020.
All of this playing out last week as Mr. Grassley released a new positive television ad touting his annual 99-county visits, his seniority in Congress, even its push-up skills. His attributes are called priceless for Iowa. So that's a positive campaign that the senator put out.
And this is very similar to other ads that Chuck Grassley has run in his past reelection campaigns, talking about that he delivers for Iowa and everything that he can accomplish, and also showing him working on the farm or running, or in this case, doing push-ups. They want to dispel any questions people might have about whether he's physically fit enough to do the job.
He turned 89 years old this past weekend. He is seeking his eighth term in the Senate. All right, let's turn to abortion. Oh, brother, did that get roiled last week? GOP Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina introduced a bill that would ban abortions nationwide after 15 weeks. Oh, so interesting how he's tossing this into the campaign with 7 or 8 weeks to go here. That bill would not interfere with states that have stricter regulations in place for abortions, but it would pare back abortion laws in bluer states that have broader abortion laws. So the interesting thing, aside from that and his timing, Iowa Republicans Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst both said they believe decisions on limiting abortion should remain with the states. Ernst said she's adamantly pro-life and said states should be part of these ongoing discussions. But neither one of them denied if they'd vote against that bill if it came up.
And I was not able to participate in those press calls that Senators Grassley and Ernst had last week, but I felt that maybe there could have been more journalistic digging there, because to say, well, I think it should be something the states deal with is one thing. That's very different from saying I would vote against this if it came to the Senate floor, which, as you mentioned, neither of them said they would vote against it. There is absolutely no reason to expect that they would. Chuck Grassley is a longtime co-sponsor of a constitutional amendment to ban abortion nationally. And in May, the Washington Post reporter Carolyn Kitchener, who covers abortion politics nationally, she reported that there were dueling groups within the Senate Republican caucus, that some wanted to introduce a nationwide 15-week ban, and some wanted to introduce a nationwide 6-week ban, and that, in fact, Joni Ernst might be the person to introduce that 6-week ban legislation in the next Congress. I could never get Ernst staff to comment or either confirm or deny that reporting. So I think that it's important to get people on the record. The three Republicans who represent Iowa in the U.S. House all immediately co-sponsored the House version of this 15-week national abortion ban. So at least they made clear where they stand. They didn't make clear whether they might support something stricter, like if a 6-week ban is introduced next year.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell is fully aware that this is a bomb going off right before the election. He's trying to run away from it, saying, no, we really not take that up. It was a state's issue, et cetera, et cetera. So Lindsey Graham didn't wait for Mitch to give his okay on introducing this.
Well, and I saw Mitch McConnell's language was a little bit careful on that as well, because I saw that he said he didn't promise that they would introduce this bill, but he didn't exactly rule out introducing maybe a stricter national abortion ban next year. Again, he said that, well, we think that this is something states can handle, but that's different from saying we definitely will never pursue any kind of a national abortion ban, which he did not say. Of course, the Republicans are favored to take control of the U.S. House. Right now, they are not favored to take control of the Senate, and so he doesn't want to do anything to jeopardize these elections.
We're not done talking about abortion yet, but I have to say it's 15 and a half after the hour. Wherever you're listening to us and you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. And brother, is there a lot going on? I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. Now let's talk about abortion court filings in Iowa. Lawyers for Iowa's biggest abortion provider argued in court documents there is no precedent or legal support for bringing back a law banning most abortions, which a judge had permanently blocked 3 years ago. Take it from there.
This is the most important abortion rights case that's pending in Iowa right now. As you remember, after the Iowa Supreme Court reversed its abortion rights precedent in June, and then a week later, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and the Casey precedents, the governor said that she was going to try to reinstate this 2018 law that would ban almost all abortions after 6 weeks. This law was struck down in 2019 under that Iowa Supreme Court precedent, which is no longer in effect. So the state had to hire private attorneys to represent them because Attorney General Tom Miller didn't want any part of this. And they filed their brief last month, their formal request for the Polk County District Court to revisit this permanent injunction and allow this 6 week abortion ban to go into effect. So the response that was filed last week was by the ACLU of Iowa, which is representing Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. And they gave the Polk County Court several reasons not to go there. You always want to give a court a lot of different paths to get to the destination you want. And that's what they did. They said, first of all, that this Iowa rules on civil procedure are very strict, and you can't appeal a permanent injunction a year, any kind of court judgment. You can't appeal more than a year after it was filed. Then they say also that there's no, the rules on appealing a final judgment spell out specific reasons you can do that, and a change in national abortion law is not one of those reasons. And finally, they say that even if the Polk County District Court says, yes, we can revisit this injunction, the Iowa Supreme Court didn't overturn the whole idea of subjecting abortion restrictions to what's called an undue burden standard that was first established under Casey. The Iowa Supreme Court said that under Iowa law, for now, we're returning to this undue burden standard. So this 6 week abortion ban that would ban abortions before many people even realize they're pregnant, that definitely would not pass that undue burden test. So overall, the court is going to have to hear from a reply brief from the state's attorneys later this month. A hearing has been scheduled for late October, and sometime later this year or early in 2023, the Polk County District Court is going to decide whether they will lift this injunction or not. And then at that point, it would probably get appealed to the Iowa Supreme Court.
So this court's decision, is that likely to decide what the state legislature may do next year?
Possibly. If the court lifts the injunction and allows the law to go into effect, then I think the state legislature probably won't have to do anything. If the state's attorneys lose in the district court, then the legislature, if it remains in Republican control, then they have a decision to make, because it may be that it's a more straightforward path just to pass a new statewide ban, either at 6 weeks or at some other point, however they would do that. But they may decide that that's more straightforward than continuing to fight this battle over an injunction that was issued in January of 2019.
And let's be very clear, until any of this happens, abortion is still legal in Iowa.
Yes, it's legal up till 20 weeks. There is a 24-hour waiting period in effect, but abortion is still broadly legal in Iowa.
All right. We talked about a bombshell in the Franken campaign. The New York Times tossed a potential bombshell into the third district race against Cindy Axne last week when an article was published on incumbent Cindy Axne's stock trades. The Times reported Axne is one of 97 members of Congress who, quote, bought or sold stock, bonds, or other financial assets that intersected with their congressional work or reported similar transactions by their spouse or a dependent child, unquote. The Times said Axne and her husband reported stock trades in 13 companies that presented potential conflicts of interest. So what do we make of that?
I reported extensively on this last year when an ethics complaint was filed against Cindy Axne related to these stock transactions. And at the time, her office said that neither she nor her husband directed any of these trades, and that they have their money manager handles all of their investments, which may well be true. Just for full disclosure, I did write in a commentary on my website last year, I said that Cindy Axne and, in fact, all members of Congress should divest from individual stocks, that would be a reasonable position to hold. But the Axne staff has said that she is not directing any of these trades. So they deny that she is using any inside information to determine when to buy or sell stocks in any financial companies. The problem is she serves on the Financial Services Committee. Some of the stocks that she had bought or sold were in major lenders, credit card companies, and it definitely could create the appearance of a conflict of interest. And that's why the New York Times did this reporting. As you mentioned, dozens of members of Congress of both parties had similar issues going on where they serve on one committee and then they were buying and selling stocks related to that area that their committee has jurisdiction over.
Of course, Zach Nunn, the Republican running against Axne, responded the way you might expect. His office called Axne, quote, one of the most corrupt politicians in D.C. And Nunn said he won't trade stocks if he's elected. He's going to support legislation to keep other lawmakers from doing so. That's just about how he would have to respond.
It is, but just to be clear, the ethics complaint that was filed against Cindy Axne last year was dismissed by the House Ethics Committee. They found no evidence that she had done anything corrupt, for instance, using the inside information to buy or sell the stocks.
All right. While this is going on, there is yet another new poll, this one in the 3rd District, a poll conducted by Impact Research. 2022 likely election voters in the 3rd District finds that Axne and Nunn are tied in the race for Congress. Again, a questionable poll. It's not the Des Moines Register poll, but everybody kind of thinks this is a close race anyway.
It was commissioned by Cindy Axne's campaign. So again, you always have to take the internal polls with a grain of salt. Tied at 47% with 5% undecided. That's where a lot of people see this race. I think the difficult thing when I talk to people who follow polling closely is just modeling the electorate. It's always a challenge to try to figure out who are the likely voters. And especially in a year like this, when there could be some surprises in either direction, history says generally the midterm election is not good for the president's political party. On the other hand, the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs reversing Roe v. Wade was clearly an inflection point that could benefit some Democratic candidates for Congress. So I think that it's really anybody's game. This 3rd congressional district race is expected to be very close.
Let's parachute into the 2nd congressional district now, where Liz Mathis, Democrat running against incumbent Ashley Hinson, released a new TV ad last week. And this one shows two county sheriffs from Linn County and Blackhawk County touting her support for law enforcement. So a Democrat getting law enforcement on her side.
Yes. And to be fair, these are in the Linn County and Blackhawk County sheriffs are Democrats themselves. But this is a testimonial ad to say that they know that Liz Mathis, as a state senator, has been supportive of law enforcement and that they don't like it when people call for defunding police or lie about other people supporting defunding the police. And this is clearly attempting to preempt what will be Republican attacks. Republican candidates all over the country in the last election cycle, they ran ads claiming that their Democratic opponents wanted to defund the police. And I'm sure that's coming in this race. It's just something that, and Liz Mathis truly has cast a lot of votes in support of law enforcement. She has never publicly called for defunding the police. She's voted for bills that increased police funding even.
And just as an aside, we should mention that both Hinson and Mathis, Democrat and Republican, have agreed to a 2nd debate, this one hosted by the station they both worked for as TV anchors and reporters, KCRG-TV in Cedar Rapids. And it's going to be carried on a couple of other stations around the state. That's going to be very interesting. Both of them worked for the station, and that's how they got well known.
Yes. And in the Cedar Rapids market, KCRG is the most watched news station. It does reach the majority of the counties in that new 2nd district that's covering most of Northeast Iowa. And there are a few counties that are in different markets, but other TV stations in those markets have agreed to carry this debate as well. So October 12th, and then the debate on Iowa PBS on October 18th.
Right. And the debate on the 12th, the one we're talking about, the KCRG is producing, going to be carried in Des Moines by KCCI TV. So you can watch it on Channel 8 there. Okay. Another TV ad was released last week. And this one is interesting in so many ways. Iowa Republican Attorney General candidate Brenna Byrd released her first TV ad of the campaign last week. It's called, and I'm only chuckling because it's just kind of interesting, Give 'em the Bird. Yes, it focuses on her record as a county prosecutor and how she's going to take on the Biden administration, and features several people who say to the camera, Give 'em the Bird. We all know what that means. How risky is this ad? Is this effective or is this a complete turnout? Yeah, I see you reacting to it too, and that's exactly the way I reacted. I mean, we all know what it means, but is it effective?
People have different views on this ad. I didn't see it as a very effective ad. It's, if you want to build name ID, her name is Brenna Byrd. She ran for attorney general in 2010, but that was before she was married. So she was Brenna Finley, and she spent a lot of money running ads in support of Brenna Finley. So now she has to raise her name ID as Brenna Byrd. And certainly Give 'em the Bird is a memorable slogan. Yes. So on that level, as a memorable ad, not like a cookie cutter political ad like so many of them are, the ad succeeds. But I didn't feel that it was very successful because it was mostly about taking on the Biden administration. And I feel that if you feel in a very antagonistic way toward the Biden administration, you're probably already planning to vote for Brenna Byrd. So I don't see it as an ad that is necessarily going to persuade this large mass of voters who have voted for Tom Miller multiple times. Remember, he's been elected attorney general 10 times. So a vast number of Iowa voters have voted for him before. And I didn't really see this ad giving people a reason not to support him. Now, it could be that she's planning other ads later that will make that case. And this is just one to get her name out there, and it certainly is memorable.
It certainly is. I mean, if they didn't know who Brenna Byrd was, they certainly know now. If you say, who was the person who ran the campaign that said, Give 'em the Bird? Well, they're going to say it was Byrd.
Right.
Okay. Very, very interesting ad on Brenna Byrd's part. Much more effective than Give 'em the Axne, Give 'em the Nun, Give 'em the Grassley, Give 'em the Frank. And that just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
All right. We have time for one more. We're having a good time here tonight. So much going on. Turning to the state lawmakers here, Iowa State House Democrats held a news conference last week in which they said they back abortion, legalized pot, more school money. Wow. Okay, what do we make of all that?
Well, they announced the day before that they're going to have a news conference rolling out their campaign agenda. And I thought, okay, raise wages, cut costs, protect reproductive rights, and invest in education. These are all things that Iowa State House Democrats have talked about for the last decade. But I wasn't expecting that collectively as a group, the Iowa House Democratic Caucus was going to come out for legalizing marijuana.
Right.
And this is new. There has never been an Iowa legislative caucus that as a group has come out with a stand. There are individual Democrats serving in the Iowa House and Senate who have introduced bills to legalize marijuana possession. But this was really new. And Jennifer Confers said that they were following what they are hearing from Iowans around the state. This is an issue where they hear from a lot of voters that they want this to happen. They think it's going to make the marijuana supply safer. They think that it will raise tax money. It won't put Iowa, right now, Iowa's at a competitive disadvantage because so many people go across the Mississippi River and can buy legal cannabis products in Illinois. And they also think that this is going to make a medical marijuana more accessible for people because Iowa's medical cannabis program right now is very limited. You can only use certain extracts and only for certain qualifying medical conditions and it doesn't cover smokable marijuana. So this, I thought, was pretty big news. It did seem to get a fair amount of media coverage last week as well.
We are almost out of time, Laura. What a week. What do you expect? What are you looking for this week?
I'm still looking. I think some state legislative candidates are going to start TV advertising this week. And I'm working on some roundups of the state House and Senate races.
Maybe the Democrats ought to take out an ad saying, Give 'em the pot.
Right.
See you later, Laura. That is it. We're out of time after a consequential Monday night of Capitol Week, one of the most consequential breaking news nights we've had. You have been listening to Capitol Week on KHY Community Radio. And a reminder, the views and opinions expressed here do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura And I will indeed be back in the same time slot next week when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. There's a lot of both and all of that. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We surely do value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.